podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Shackles Are Off podcast. Now, if you've not enjoyed the last two podcasts that we've put out, well, there's no helping you, is there, really, to be honest. I mean, we've had two brilliant guests to kind of get back into that little, I would you say, like a little swing of things that we're trying to get into, Chris, I'd say?
Yeah, it's a swing of something. It was when I was swinging on the tricep pushdowns in the gym.
I wonder where that
night,
was going then.
I had someone approach me.
How did you?
I had someone approach me to talk to me about Adam Gilchrist, who just listened to the podcast on the train on the way back from London. So the Shackles Are Off is getting out there, and it's obviously getting people interested in the guests that we've had on the last two. Certainly help in that matter.
You know what? There's it's good. Yeah, I mean, Michael Holden, brilliant. Thanks for all the feedback and response as well, by the way, and getting involved on the social channels and stuff this week. We put a couple of things out on the social channels, some of which were absolutely brilliant. And I mean, it took our producer Chuck a long time to sift through all of these. And thank you so much for all those messages, by the way, that you did send over. It went absolutely crazy. We had like 1,500 responses to this, I think, and still rising by the time we record this. Funny meetings with cricketers. We had some crackers. Lots of random spots. Steve Smith in a supermarket. And, people in Nando's and people stumbling out of pubs and that kind of stuff, which was really good. We actually put a few of these to this week's guest, which is Steve Harmison. We'll talk about Harmy in just a second. But there was some really good interactions with cricketers. A chap called Bully tweeted, "I had a pee next to Mark Butcher in Brisbane back in 1998. He'd scored a ton in that test match and was very drunk." Well, obviously he's going to be. There were some really good ones anyway. So thank you for all those. And we did put some of those to Steve Harmison. Keep them coming in as well. When we put them out on social media, we will try and get some of them read out on the podcast. But Steve Harmison, Millard, absolutely. I mean, we know him fairly well. We've got the pleasure of actually sort of bumping into him at a few test matches. He's done a few events for the Barmy Army, etc. But you never really know where it's going to go with an interview with Harmy. I mean, I did zero prep when we spoke to him, actually. Absolutely zero, because you just know. You can ask about three questions and get an hour out of him. He's great.
He's unbelievable, isn't he? He's obviously in the media now, been seen a lot this winter on BT Sport and also doing bits on TalkSport as well as ever. But he's brilliant. He's great. He's great for a, shall we say, controversial matter. He never holds back. A true northeasterly bloke who just gets stuck into any matter and speaks his heart. We like that on the Shackles Are Off, don't we? We like people that come on and tell the truth and don't beat around the bush. Ask Mikey Holden that.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. This is the sort of guest that we want. So we'll get into the podcast in just a moment. And by the way, you might be listening to this podcast on the way over to the Caribbean. There's a good chance of that, actually, if you're listening to this. If you're not, and you're just on the tube or something, well, sorry about that. But if you, which is quite, actually, probably more likely, by the way. But Chris is going to be like 4,000 England fans in the Caribbean. And there's a large proportion of that Barmy Army. It's going to be brilliant, isn't it? I mean, you're going out, enjoying it. But you're just so excited.
Can't wait. It's been so long since our last overseas tour, and it's the pent-up demands there. I've seen people taking off over the last few days and getting stuck into the airport beer or wine before they travel. And it's great. The excitement started to build. Antigua first. The players are playing in a warm-up match as we record this intro. So it feels tangible now. It's touching distance. We can reach it almost. And really looking forward to what we've got in store for the whole series. There's a rumour that there's been 7,500 tickets sold for days 1 to 3 at the Barbados Test. which is incredibly exciting. Antigua's going to see great numbers, as is Grenada. Three very different islands, three lovely islands that we can't wait to go out and visit. And we've got so much planned. Antigua's very resorty, so there's not a lot of events going on there. It'll be all about the cricket in Antigua. But when you get to Barbados, bang, we've got your pre-test party on the 15th, which should be a really good event, which is going to be a really, really fun night at Halo Lounge, St. Lawrence Gap. We've got Randy Caddick there on the DJ decks, our resident Barmy Army DJ. Finchie the trumpeter will be playing all night, teaching everyone the songs before the test match. And you've got plenty of rum, Mount Gay rum and Banks beers are available for everyone to have a nice drink in the Bayesian afternoon, evening weather.
Oh, so good. So good. And we've talked a little bit about Grenada as well on our podcast. That's not an island that gets talked about as much as Antigua or Barbados. So just tell us a little bit about it. And you've been speaking to someone as well, haven't you, from Pure Grenada, who are sort of helping us out a little bit with this pod.
Absolutely. Petra Roach, she is the CEO of Grenada Tourism, and she is wonderful. She is really passionate about Grenada and what it's got to offer, and it really has got a lot to offer. We've spoke about it on this podcast, Greggy, a few times about how nice it is. I'm not going to ruin it because I'm going to speak to Petra very soon on the show, so I'll let her do the talking. But it's a very special place. It's a very small island, but it's got so much to offer, and everyone who's lucky enough to be going there in March should be very, very excited. And if you are not going there in March, there's still flights available to get you out the day before the test match with Virgin. I even checked yesterday, there is still flights available to get you to Grenada for that 1 week. It could even be the decider. If it's one all, I want to see plenty of Shackles Are Off listeners flying out, getting behind the lads so we can take home the series winning in Pure Grenada.
There we have it. Here is your chat with Petra, and she's going to tell you all about Grenada.
Life in Grenada and what all your followers and members of the Barmy Army can expect when they come and visit us for the third test match.
Very good. Yes, we're absolutely thrilled to be coming back to Grenada. It's been a long time, and it's my favourite island of the Caribbean.
Did you hear that? Can we please repeat that? It's his favourite island in the Caribbean.
It is, and it is famous for the land of the spice. And we've spent 24 hours in Grenada so far, and we've absolutely loved every minute. The people, the safety.
Absolutely, and I think the thing with Grenada is that it's like that very effortless Caribbean beauty. We've got the majestic mountains, we've got that beautiful, gorgeous white sand and turquoise beaches, we've got the cascading waterfalls, we've got amazing food, and I think all of it is wrapped with that wonderful welcome that the Grenadian people give. And they love to have a vibe. And that's the whole motto, the tagline that we're going to be pushing for the test match from March 24th to 28th. It's not just the cricket, it's the vibe. So we've got some amazing things organised for you guys when you come here. It's all about what happens before and after the cricket as well. We know that there's going to be phenomenal cricket on the field, but what we're doing is we're closing off a specific area. We're going to create a fan zone. We're going to bring back spice masks. We're going to have people in their carnival costumes. We're going to have the beautiful jab jab. We're going to have chutney. We'll have Grenadian music. It's going to be fantastic.
Sign me up. Absolutely sign me up. Now, I had my wrist slapped a minute ago for mentioning something that you may have just mentioned on air. So I was very excited about this concept when I heard about it earlier. Now you've blurred it out to the public. There's going to be a bit of a party, isn't there?
Well, we really feel that Grenadian culture is something that is so wonderful that we got to share it, and it's so easy just when you're part of it to almost become assimilated and become a Grenadian.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that you mentioned, which I really need to reiterate, this is such a safe island. I leave my car door unlocked, the house door unlocked. You know, there is nothing to worry about from a safety perspective, and therefore, we really want to ensure that you get out of your hotels and not just go down to the stadium, but you go and wander off the beaten path and look and find all those little secrets that are absolutely magical.
Right, that's Petra. That's our first guest, effectively, of this podcast. Love it. And our main big guest is the legendary, wonderful... I mean, I could listen to this bloke all day. He's big. The big man himself. Steve Harmison on the Shackles Are Off podcast. We have the brilliant Steve Harmison, friend of the Barmy Army. He's done loads of stuff for us, events and been out on tour and all sorts of stuff with us before. Spoke to us on the YouTube channel, this, that and the other. Now TalkSport fame, 05 hero. Welcome along, Harmy, to the podcast. What we do is we start this with every single person. And by the way, big shoes to fill. We had Mikey Holden on last week. But we ask everybody the same question. And it is cricketing beginnings. How did it start? I mean, we know all about Ashington Cricket Club, but is it before that? Was it watching a parent or someone like that play, or older brother or whatever it is, back garden cricket? How did cricket start for you, pal?
And they are big shoes to fill, Mikey Holden, by the way. And I've seen you had Gilly on before that as well. So, yeah, following in good footsteps. Mine was at Bedlington Cricket Club. It wasn't at Ashington Cricket Club. Didn't go to Ashington Cricket Club until I was about 11, sort of 12, 13. But my background was always football. So Bedlington second team, they had one of the best cup sides for about 10 years. They never lost a cup match for 10 years. They never finished any higher than sort of mid-table in the league. And it was just because they had about 8 very, very good non-league footballers who were decent cricketers play for them. So they missed the first 5 games of the cricket season. Missed the last 5 games of the cricket season. But obviously the cup matches are played in the middle with obviously the lights and at night time. So they had a fantastic cup side, but they just couldn't win the league because all the players, you know, they were having 9 and 10 players at the start of the season. And that's how I ended up playing, because I was a scorer for the majority of the season. And then I'd play at the end of the season as a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old, an 11-year-old playing for Bedlington second team, because all the footballers had gone off back to playing football because we're getting paid a few quid. So that's how my initial upbringing was. I was a scorer for my dad's team at Bedlington, and played whenever there was a car late or somebody couldn't get for the last minute. And then the opposition scorer did both books. So he got double money. I got a game and he got double bubble. So that's how it all started.
That's quality. So good. So what age would you have been picked up by Durham then? Presumably, from what you're saying, mid-teens maybe? I mean, what was the setup like?
No, I played for Northumberland. I didn't really play too much representative cricket. Played a little bit, 12s, 13s, 14s, but not football was the only thing I was interested in. I had no cricket interest whatsoever. And I was 16 or 17, played in the 17s, I think, for Northumberland. At Jesmond against Durham. And I think Jeff Cook was watching Michael Gough, who was opening the batting for Durham. And I was playing. It was one of these, I think it was a 2-day game. I'm not sure what the whole story was. But I had just sort of started a Brick Lane apprenticeship. And I didn't play in half the games for Northumberland. But this was one game that Northumberland managed to convince me to play in. Because when people say I was a complex character when I played for England, boy, I was a complex character when I was growing up. I was a nightmare. I was a shocker. I never went to school. I was a delinquent. Never went to school. I left school at 15, didn't do any GCSEs. And it's the ball rolled from there. But I played against Durham in this game, and Jeff Cook tells a story that he went round to the Northumberland coaches and gone, "Where on earth are you getting him from?" And the coaches said, "Well, we're just pleased. For one, he's turned up. And two, it's not football season because He only plays cricket for 3 months during the winter, during the summer, when he's not playing football." So Jeff managed to convince me to go and play a second team game for Durham. Where was that? I can't remember where that. South Shields against Ian Gould. He had Gunner, the umpire, and I was only 17. This ridge on the field at at South Shields, and Gunnar walks out number 11, second team. So he still reminds me of it now. He reminds me every time now. I didn't know where it was going at the best of times. So as a 17-year-old, you can imagine. And I bowled this one ball at Gunnar, and Gunnar hit the deck. And I mean, it took him off his feet, hit the deck, rolled on his arse, and I can just remember him. I can't swear, Connor. I can just remember him saying, fucking hell, what's that? And it was, and that was the start. That was the start of me going forward. I played two more second team games. And then I played for the first team at 17. I think I was the youngest at Durham to play again. It was against Leicester in 96. Leicester won the championship on that game. West Indies coach Phil Simmons had a bit of a day out, and it was one of them times when Durham weren't very good. You know, teams were coming up for 2 days and not for three. And Phil Simmons got 7 for 40, and he got about 160 or 170 in the match. Game started on the Thursday. I wasn't playing Varsity last weekend of the season because that's when it was. I had 48 league wickets for Ashton at the time, so I was desperate to get 50, but I was like, no, I'm not going to get it. So we started on the Thursday. We bowled out by, I think, lunchtime mid-afternoon on the Thursday. They rocked up a massive score, and then we were bowled out by the end of the day, Friday. And I rocked up, I think it was at Percy Main, and I got 4 wickets, so 2 wickets to get 50 on the Saturday playing for Ashton. So it was a whirlwind start to that was from Jeff seeing me to that moment. You're looking at, 6 weeks, if that.
No.
And then I got dropped. Then I got dropped into Pakistan in November. Was my first meeting with certain Mr. Flintoff, and the eye-opening tour of Pakistan, having not been out of Ashington too many times in my 17 year time on this planet. I lasted about 10 days because I couldn't handle being away from home. I had no idea what was hitting me. So it was a little bit of a whirlwind start of my career from a cricketer.
Oh, mate, so good.
Did you have to knock the football on the head then, Harmy? Or did you try and mix the both and think this ain't going to work?
I mixed both. I'll tell you a great story. I mixed both for the next few winters. The next couple of winters, I mixed both. And then the following year, I bowled at David Boone in the Nets. I remember Booney tells the story. He told me the story that I'd been bowling and he got told by Jeff Cook to stay upstairs into one of the boxes and watch bowls. And Booney was like, "Now I'm going to have to come and have a look at this." So he came and put his pads on. I was shitting myself bowling at him. And basically, my body wasn't fit to sort of play at the time because I was struggling with a growing pains, back problems. And Booney had told Jeff that whatever happens, we need to make sure he's fit for the start of next season. And that was in 98. But just prior to 98, I played football. And I was playing football all the way up to the end of it. And I was playing for Ashton in a game at Prudder. And they had my other brother was 16 at the time, and they had a big centre forward, and he was bullying. And I don't know what happened. Ended up having a go at him, and he had a go at me. And I was standing next to him, and the red mist was right in front of me, and I bang straight on, boosh. That was it, right in front of the linesman. I get sent off. Suspension comes through. I get 9-week suspension.
Jeez.
In them days, you didn't get banned for 3 games. You got weeks for violent conduct. I got 9 weeks, which started on the April the 1st, of which my first Durham contract started on April the 1st. So that was a sign that was more or less saying you've got to give up football.
Well, that is like fate, isn't it? Everything happens for a reason. By the way, Steve Eric Cantona Harmison with that lengthy ban.
He came at me, and we're both sort of there. And he's seen a chance of getting somebody sent off, and I just followed through that little bit further. So I think it was getting one on him before he got one on me. So, but it was part of life's little learning thing. But you're right, fate was there.
Yeah, it was. Jeez,
suspension started at the time my contract started. So from there, 98 started, and I played the whole season for Durham.
What is it about Ashington, Harmy? What is it about that little club, that little town?
I don't know. They are, I wouldn't say they're made different, but there's the working class people of this area. And I mentioned Jeff Cook because I think Durham Cricket Club, You can't name it Jeff Cook Cricket Club. It's just not possible. The ground should be named after Jeff Cook, a little bit like Sir Alex Ferguson. The ground should be named after Jeff Cook for what he did for not just for Durham County Cricket Club, but for the people that are in the area. And I think it's not an embarrassment, but he's got a members area named after him. He should have the whole ground named after him if he could have, but it wasn't for sponsorship reasons. But he would go off into these little mining villages, in these little places and hungry areas, and make sure that the talent, little bit talent that were there, he would go and get them. You think of Collie going into sort of Consett, Shotley Bridge area, mining village, Anfield Plain when Killer was there. You know, Washington was a big man. When like Sir Philip Mustard. The Teesside area for Liam Plunkett. Things like that. And then even going over to Cockermouth and getting Ben Stokes. Jeff wouldn't look. I remember. I'm not going to say what the cricket club's name is, but people will know from the area I'm talking about. But there was a nice, big, shiny new indoor school built in my area. And I remember going there with Durham, or it was either Durham or England. And I said to Jeff, wow, this is amazing how much money these have got. And look at this. And Jeff said, that's fine, but they'll never produce cricketers. He says, because this area, they're just an expensive babysitting service. And when he said that to me, I thought, penny dropped me how Jeff looks for players. He looks for players in areas where he knows their lives will be made a difference if they end up getting a chance to play cricket. Play sport, and that's what served Jeff very, very well. And the Asherton area was the same; it always has been the same. Now, traditions of football mainly. Professional golfer in Ken Ferry, three professional or four professional cricketers in myself, my brother, obviously Mark and John Inchmore, who played a lot for Worcestershire, and then the football connection, and even in the referee connection as well, and Michael Oliver. So. It's a small place, but it's a place which has had success, being able to look up to people, and there's always been somebody there for them to look up to. Go into the cricket club, that's where Mark got inspiration from, myself and then Ben. And now these kids going to the cricket club when Mark's there. Even now, he's obviously off to the West Indies in the next sort of 24 hours, but he's brought a big bag. I've just picked Charlie up this afternoon. He's brought a big bag of kit back from his last away trip. All the things that he's not, and he'd give it all to the kids. And when you've got people that do that, I did that at Ashton's, at the cricket club. And when you've got people like that, kids are not just inspired by getting something that's been worn by somewhere else. It makes them go that extra chance to want to be that person as well. And I think that's largely down to where Ashton is.
Spoke to Woody about this on the podcast last year, I think, and he was just saying how much of a buzz it is for him. It's the one most exciting thing. He said he didn't realise actually that he had won the World Cup. It had not sunk in properly until the mayor of Ashington, I think he said, actually said to him, please welcome World Cup winner Mark Wood. And he was like, that was the first time, and he'd heard people say it in interviews and on the telly and journos and stuff saying to him and asking him the question, but he said that's when it really hit home properly. And I think he obviously knew what an impact it'd have on the area, having a World Cup winner, obviously yourself as well with the 05 Ashes as well. Just wonder, how many more are you going to come from your area? We're going to have, a World Cup winner in 2032 or something coming from Ashington, or maybe even sooner.
Well, they've got a lot of talent in this area, whether it's from Ashington or connected to Ashington, living in the surrounding areas. And there's a young kid that playing I live in between Ashington and Newbiggin. There's a young kid that was playing at Sunderland. He's now gone to Portsmouth, and there's kids looking up to him. He plays a good standard of football. Like I said before, Michael Oliver. There's a lot of young referees want to be referees from this area because of Michael. And Michael's a great lad, and he's somebody that he's always seen around the football club when the football are playing. He's always at Newcastle matches. Michael wonders why he's not allowed to referee Newcastle United. And if he hasn't got a game on Saturday, got a pint of lager in his hand and he's got a Newcastle shirt on, why, Michael, you're not allowed to do it? But he inspires people because they see him on the television, and he's a good bloke. He's a nice lad. And when he's around, he gets involved with people. So I think that while you've got heroes like that, then I think you will always have a chance of breeding more, you know, untapped or young kids that can either play football, play cricket, play anything. But the biggest one at the minute is the girls. The girls, there's some, you know, good girls playing cricket at the minute, from this area. And long may that continue, because that is a market and a sport which I think will only get better and better.
Certainly growing, isn't it, Harmy? The little mention there of Newcastle United. Now, I must admit, I've heard it before, Harmy, but one of my favourite stories in cricket, of all the stories out there, is your special little connection to Newcastle United. So for those that haven't heard on the podcast, can you tell them about your little connection to the club?
Well, I've always had a connection to the club. With I was at the club till, well, for the first intake of School of Excellence when I was 11. So I was there until I was about 14, 15. Then I got slower and everybody else got taller and bigger and stronger. So that was, that's just sport. So from that point of view, I've always had an affiliation with Newcastle. And it come back to really hit home in, I think in 98, that I mentioned a little bit earlier in the podcast, that when Durham got me back on my feet from the Pakistan trip, I was growing pains and everything that was going. The fitness coach that worked for Durham for about 4 months, and he only worked for Durham for 4 months because he was that good, and Newcastle were training behind at Chester Street. Newcastle come and took him. They just come and took him off us. I think Hullock was manager at the time. And Paul Winsper, and he was amazing. He knew body inside out. Got me fit more than once to get back on and playing. And I got injured after getting man of the match in Dhaka in 2003. And I didn't go to Sri Lanka. And there was an article written by Derek Pringle. It was horrific. It was just personal. It was terrible. I've had a conversation with Pringle about it before. I didn't want an apology. He didn't offer one. But he was obviously given some inside information on a story, which basically said, I didn't want to play cricket, wasn't interested in traveling away from home. England should just wash their hands with me. And I didn't like that. And Paul Winsper rang me up when that article was written. And he was obviously his fitness coach at Newcastle. And he said, do you want to come and train here? The manager's just read it. And he said, if you want to come and meet him, you can. And you're more than welcome to come and use our facilities. And I was like, wow, so Bobby Robson. Because, like, you know, this man's managed like the best players of all time, and he's asked me to come and meet him. So he's a massive cricket fan, and I love him a bit, and he was brilliant with me. And I remember him sort of coming into, he had the actual article with him when I met him having lunch. Paul said, you know, he wasn't happy with this. He knows how much of a Newcastle fan you are. Do you want to come and train here? Do you really want to be a professional cricketer? And I was like, of course I do. I want to play for England. I want to do this. A lot of what anybody would say when you're sitting in front of Sir Bobby Robson. But he blew me away. He said, listen to this man, Paul. He says, you know, obviously you know him very, very well, because Windy had told him all about me. And then he took me into the gym, and he pointed at, the gym session was going on, and he pointed at Gary Speed, Alan Shearer, Shea Given, young James Milner, Steve Harper, and said, look, you follow them for the next 8-9 weeks, eat with them, train with them, listen to what they say, watch what they do, and you'll turn into an international sportsman, because that's what they all are. And I was like mesmerized. And I was like, there's Alan Shearer. As much as I'd known Alan before, there's Alan Shearer. I was like, I couldn't believe what I was standing witnessing and what he was asking me. And then he did, to be fair. He pointed at, the likes of Jermaine Janis, Craig Bellamy, Titus Bramble, one or two more in the corner. He says, you go anywhere near them, and he says, I will kick you out. He says, because I can't get rid of them. He says, because I need them. He says, I can get rid of you. He says, you don't go anywhere near them. And I was like, yes, but I was calling him boss already. And I was like, I've only been in there for like 20 minutes. And then for 9 weeks, basically, I had to be in the building at the same time as the players, with them in the afternoon, and then in the morning, train in the afternoon, and then in the afternoon, make sure that you ate with them. But one of the good stories from being in there was one of my first days. And so Bobby, not knowing to me, and I got told I learned the hard way, nobody ate before 1 o'clock. So I've gone in, I've got my plate of food, and I'm sat down. And I mean, as I was walking away, He's now a very good friend of mine. He stuffed me outside. Shea Given waves at me and he comes, I'm like, come and sit here. So there was Shea Given and the great late Gary Speed, one of the best human beings on this planet. He was an unbelievable man, unbelievable character, unbelievable role model. And he's sitting right opposite me. And I'm now just about to tuck into my dinner and Bobby's come in and he's gone berserk. What are you doing? What are you doing? And I'm looking around. Now he's talking to me. So what are you doing? I said, I'm sorry, boss. Am I not allowed to eat? He went, nobody eats in this building before 1 o'clock. You too. No, did you not tell him? The two of them just looked and they went, no, you'll learn the hard way. And that was it. I was gone. I thought I'm leaving the building. But Bobby made sure that everybody stopped what they did at 1 o'clock. Everybody in that building ate at the same time. If you're getting treatment, you had to stop. You come in. You're working in the office, you had to stop. You had to come in. Everybody ate together. And I mean, it was brilliant. And the two of them, and I looked across the two of them, they were pissing themselves laughing. You two, and they've gone, well, you'll learn the hard way. So I was like, I was wondering why. I was like so pleased that Shea Givens asked me to sit next to him. But then I realised why he did, because he's stuffing me out of sight. So it was a little bit of a, some people sing songs, some people embarrassing themselves. I certainly embarrassed myself. I had 8 weeks there, and it was one of the best 8 weeks of my life. And that was the fittest I've ever been. I went to the West Indies and never looked back. And every single time I had a chance to go and train, our little passages to go and train, the doors at St. James's Park, well, the training ground was always open. And I seen a few managers off, but because the senior players had said that I was good to, you know, I was good to come in, I was trustworthy, and they were comfortable to have me in.
Brilliant.
It was a nice feeling to have a professional sports club on my doorstep that I could go and use and train.
So good. So good. Oh, there'll be people listening to this like so envious and so jealous of that. I can think of a few.
Amazing. I tell you who was the best. So Bobby was the best.
Yeah.
Graham Souness, what a lovely man. Yeah, I thought I was done. I was on my way in, Paul Winsper, new manager is Graham Souness. And I was in the corridor. He walked past me in the corridor, and he was, "Oh, you're the cricketist." I said, "Yeah, yeah." Shook hands. He looked me straight in the eye, and he said, "You're more than welcome to hang around. It's up to you, but you're more than welcome to hang around." He said, "I spoke to a few senior players, and he says they're all vouched for you. You can hang around, use this facility, use Paul, whatever you want. Doors open." In the mornings, I would go on the exercise bike, and he would be on the exercise bike for about an hour and 20 minutes. Wow. All he would talk about, he didn't like cricket, no interest in cricket, he's a Scotsman. But all he talked about was traveling, where he'd been in the world, where I'd been in the world. He talked about little traveling things. And he was an amazing man. He was a lovely, lovely man. It didn't work for him at Newcastle, but what a great man he was.
Yeah. Oh, there'll be so many. I can think of a few Barmy Army members who will be probably listening to this on the plane to the West Indies going, oh, that's so good. So that's great. I just want to get you, pick your brains on some of this stuff. We've not got too long actually, but we put this out on social media the other day, and I just know I can feel this from every fibre of my being. You've got something to add to this. It's going to be great. So we put this out on social media the other day. We had 1,500 responses. Like, it went crazy. And there are some absolute belters. Basically, it was like, what are your funniest meetings with cricketers? So there was some belters. So, I mean, number one was obviously Specsavers responding, saying Ben Stokes told us to offer Jack Leach free glasses for life. So we did. Very funny. A certain Michael Vaughan got involved. He said, I once got Sachin Tendulkar out. Brilliant. Yeah, that wasn't really in the spirit of things. We had loads of random spots. Steve Smith in a supermarket vegetable aisle. David Willey in Nando, Sir Alistair Cook in Costa, Owen Morgan in KFC, etc. I know, being the man about, you know, just normal sort of salt of the earth bloke that you are, Harmy, you'll have had loads of people coming up to you in really random places. And I could tell you're probably thinking, oh my word, where do I start with this? So come on, hit us with some.
Oh, I don't know. I was expecting you to say, now we've seen Steve Armisen in a bar. And I was like, no.
I can vouch for that one.
I'm trying to think. No. You get in America, I remember being in America going, you know, many, many, you know, we went, I think as soon as my international days had finished, I remember being in America And I seen a Barmy Army t-shirt and straight across, bang. I was thinking, these get everywhere. You lot get everywhere. But yeah, I think probably I think it was a basketball game in America. We were watching the Magic, Orlando Magic. And I mean, we were in the cards. We couldn't get a ticket for love nor money. We literally just the day before we're going to go, well, trying to find something to do. And well, the kids said the basketball was on and it was more or less sold out. We couldn't get a ticket. It was only in the gods. And I remember being on the concourse and somebody recognized me there. And I was thinking, anywhere, they don't even know what cricket is in America. And there was one there. I'm trying to think anywhere else. No, you get the usual. We've got the usual ones going to obviously in football matches, non-league football matches. I've seen get some people coming across there, but I don't think that's any usual because I'm always at non-league football. But America is probably the one.
Did you get any people when you were managing a bit of non-league football? Did you get any like the opposition? So
yeah, quite a bit. They would have a go. Yeah, tell me to go back and tell that story on the radio next week. And it's like, right, fair enough. Yeah, you.
Oh wow, okay, touche.
Yeah, you get some stick. You got some ridiculous stick. So, but there's nothing more any more stick than what I'd got from standing on the sideline. Anywhere in Australia anywhere where you understood the English language that it was or that was spoken, you got stick. So you get used to it. You got used to it, but it was always enjoyable. I always loved getting stick on the boundary. It was always the favorite thing. I loved
it.
Did
you get much in 06 after that?
I got a little bit, as you can imagine. I did get a little bit. I got one at Adelaide. He was shouting at me. He had me for about 10 minutes. I just kept him going, and then in the end, I quite like getting involved, and I just turned around. But what did you just say? And this bloke had just shouted, he's a sort of 50-odd-year-old. Harmison, the only good thing about you is your missus. And I just started to laugh. I says, she's over there. She's all around there. I says, you go and try and have a conversation with her. That was it. All his mates around him just...
Yeah, loving it. Love it.
I went back for the next over. I had them out of the palm of my hands for the next 2 hours because I went back for the next over. He's not there. But every time I went back at the end of the over, I was like, where's my mate gone? Nothing. He'd gone. So they started to be on my side. But no, you got little bits. I remember being in India once and there was this annoying character on the boundary who nailed me. He's telling me in English everything I was doing wrong, blah, blah, blah. He went on for like 2 hours. And I was like, no point picking a fight with him because nobody around him understands. And then at the end of the session, I'm walking off and he asked me to sign this thing. Program or whatever. And I said, no. And he said, what for? I said, you've abused me for the last... I said, you've abused me in English for the last 2 hours. I said, no. I said, you're from Manchester. He went, why? Can you tell by the accent? I went, no, you're full of shit. And that was him. He just disappeared. And I probably just alienated half of the Barmy Army because they're all from Manchester, but he was full of shit. Yeah, I did sign it, by the way. I did sign the program when I came out after tea. It was just a bit fun, but... Yeah, these are the things that, honestly, cricketers get amused by things like that because of when you stand on the boundary and the ball's not coming to you, you've got to think of things that can occupy your mind and things like that are what was used to get me going.
That's one of the most enterprising ways of doing it, I think. I love it. Absolutely love it. Another thing, and I don't want to make this all about our social media interactions this week, but this is very much to do with you. We asked for our favourite wickets on our social channels on Instagram, and people just sending pictures in, and you'll have seen this probably on Twitter flying about. It went quite big this week, and obviously people loving it. People sending the why you're chirping now, mate, Mitch Johnson, and then obviously Simon Jones cleaning up Michael Clarke with that brilliant noise.
That was the one. I've seen Jimmy's tweet on that.
Yeah,
that was the one. The noise on that was just unbelievable. It was so loud. It was the reason why it was so loud was because there was a split second in the crowd who just went silent. It was a disbelief that it was a pause because of the noise, and then there was a pause, and then there was just a crescendo of noise. Yeah. I still think that's the one.
That's awesome.
That is the one. Yeah.
But you say that, but you were basically at number four on the list. There was a lot of entry. By the way, this is like thousands of entries of people's favourite wicket ever and come out number four, Harmy winning at Edgbaston, basically, is how we put it. I mean, there'll be loads of people who voted for that and sent that in who are on, you know, listening to the podcast. Talk us through it. I'm sure you absolutely hate talking us through that moment, mate.
The Edge Bastion one was, it was, we thought the job had been done the night before. You get Clark out, literally had nothing left. Everybody's going, what was the thing with Michael Clark? And it was like, I'd bounced Shane Warne. I'd got into Shane Warne a couple of overs before. Bounced Michael Clark first ball, hit him in the sort of ribcage second ball. I was trying to sort of get it sort of down leg side so he could just down a fine leg so I could get a chance at Warne. Bear in mind, we had claimed the extra half an hour, so we were on our feet. And nothing was working to get Clark, to get Warne on strike. And it was just at the top of my mark. It was like the only thing I haven't tried was the slower ball. I had the worst slower ball in the history of the game in one-day cricket. I tried it three times in a row to miss Hendra Singh Dhoni. The first one, he hit 5 rows back. The second one, he hit 10 rows back. And I thought, double, I've got to bluff him again. He can't pick the third one. And he hit that 15 rows back. It was bad. And the only person that's never picked it was Michael Clark. And it didn't just get him LB, would have gotten him LBW, but then gets him bowled. So the euphoria of going off, we're thinking, that's it, game over, 107. No chance these are getting at that. We'd be on Broad Street by 11:15. Where's your Aussies gone? That was it. That was how we were going to be thinking about it. And then, obviously, Brett had a different idea. He was like a voodoo doll, Brett Lee. We just hit him everywhere. We hit him. I think he did 3 singles without his bat in his hand just because of being hit. Yeah, he was brilliant in that series, both bat, ball, and as a character. He was amazing, Brett Lee. And, you know, Casper, who, he was out first ball in the first innings. You're thinking, there's no chance these can win this. But Warney's Warney, and whenever you put a challenge in front of the great man, he'd always come out fighting, and boy, did he come out fighting. There was an annoying group of Australian supporters. Merv Hughes wasn't one of them, but he was leader of the touring party. Classic. And they thought it was good, singing 107 to go, and they sang every single run down over. So they were annoying for about 45 runs. They started to become very funny with 60 runs to go. And then we were worried with 20 runs to go. And then we obviously, Warney kicks his stumps over. Casper comes in, bats brilliantly. And then that sort of last 2 balls where the big boom and full toss was supposed to be an in-swing in Yorker, which got horribly wrong and went the other way. For about 40 minutes, I'd lost the use of a bouncer because I couldn't sort of get my left side through. I was just knackered, simple as that. I was dribbling down the leg side. It wasn't working. And then the big boom and full toss went out to Simon in the deep. And I've decided that, well, there's only one thing you were good at, really, from a bowling point of view, was bowl fast bounces. And needs must, and this is now. And, you know, Casper's managed to get his glove to it. And Garant doesn't get the credit he deserves because it's a fantastic catch.
Yeah.
Garant goes diving down leg side and the finished off, topped off by unbelievable commentary by the great man Richie Beno, and England are now 1-1 and jumping around like idiots.
There we go. It's number 4 on the list of all-time favourite wickets. I mean, it's awesome. It's so, so good. The way you talk about it, go straight to number 1 for me. Love it. Absolutely love it. Yeah. You've not got long, Harmy, but you are out in the West Indies. I'm hazarding a guess here. I don't know this for a fact. Yeah. You are out there, yeah?
I'm going out, I don't know when I'm going out, but I'm going out to do, obviously, the TV and the radio. So I'm really looking forward to that. I can't believe me too. You're too great. Yeah, I'm going to be with the Barmy Army on more than one occasion. I can't believe me too great, pals. When sort of who took over from Hoggard and Harmison, I can't believe they're not going. I really can't. I don't know why. I don't know how that decision was made. But it's going to be strange not having Broad and Anderson there. I don't think it's the right decision. I really don't. I think it might have been going through my mind if England had a very good Ashes or potentially had won the Ashes to see where we're going. But we can't afford. We have to start winning cricket matches now. And unfortunately, the likes of Mahmood and Fisher haven't sort of been given the credit of getting picked because of being overshadowed by Broad and Anderson not going. So it'll be good to see Lees and how Alex Lees goes. Joe going at 3. I've been talking about that for 5 years, and now he's World Test Player of the Year, batting at number four. Broughton Anderson, still two of our best bowling options. And it just seems that, as we do with whatever comes out of the ECB, we make a monumental fuck up sometimes. And for me, two things that didn't need changing was Broughton Anderson not being there and Root going from four to three. But what do I know? I'm just a gobshite that works on TV and radio. Let's see what happens. But fingers crossed for everybody. We have a great time. England desperately need to win. Desperately need to win. We can't go over there as a fact-finding mission. It looks as though we've picked a squad for that. But even still, we should still have enough to beat the West Indies when you look at the squad that they have picked this week. So yeah. England should, for me, should win there, even though they've only won one there once since 67, 68. But it'll be a fascinating tour, and it'll be an interesting first test match selection. And hope that England, when they're now pressing the reset button, don't pick the same bowling attack that they picked the Gabba 4 months earlier and make a complete hash of the West Indies like they did in Australia.
Yeah. Absolutely. Harmy, before we lose you, you did just mention Matty Fisher there, and you were involved at Yorkshire again helping your good mate Goffey out. Quick note on how that's going.
Yeah, he got me when I'd had a few again, which, to be fair, wasn't, you know, that could have been any night of the last 15 years. But he got me to come and help. It's been a tricky few months for Yorkshire. And Goffey will get it right. All you Yorkshire fans listening, Goffey will get it right. I've got no doubt that whatsoever. I've got some exciting young players, really exciting young players. And one of them is Matt Fisher. He's been around a little bit because obviously he made his debut when he was 15, but his body issues have been there for everybody to see. He's got skills. He really has. He's worked so hard to get himself in a position to be selected. He had a very good trip to Australia with the Lions. He's rightly been selected on this trip. I'd love to see him rub shoulders with Roland Anderson. I really would, because I think the knowledge and the value you get off that would be excellent. Like I said before, I hope it's not a fact find. I hope it's a fact finding mission. Now they've picked this squad when it comes to finding out about Mahmood and Fisher, because like I just made a joke of before, there's no point not taking Broughton Anderson if you're going to go in with the same bowling attack like you did at the Gabba. So for me, Fisher and Mahmood, they've got to play one, possibly two test matches to find out how good they are, where they stand in the bowling, the numbers going forward. And I'd love to see Fisher get a go, especially in the first test match in Antigua, because he's worked hard. I know he's worked hard to get there because I've seen it. And he's a fantastic young man, great human being. He's got time for everybody. He's got a kind heart. And I just hope that, you know, the injury problems he's had in the past are all behind him. And he starts his career with a bang in the West Indies.
Harmy, I love listening to you talk, mate. You have got you've got jobs to do, mate, so crack on. But I love listening to you talk. If you want to hear Steve Harmison talk more sense like he does and straight talking, Talk Sport and the Cricket Collective, great podcast. Don't mind plugging a rival podcast as well, as where you can hear Steve Harmison in the West Indies. Harmy, let's talk again soon, mate. But yeah, enjoy. And all the Barmy Army members, I'm sure, will enjoy listening to you talk as well out there in the West Indies. But have a good one, mate. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
No problem. Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Podcast Network.